an entrepreneur rises to power. He grows disgusted by his perceived laziness of the greater populace. He has grown stern and remains industrious in business. He's grown cold and won't give up one red cent to charity. It sounds like something you hear in the news every day about Wall Street, about private equity, about hedge funds. This is why this man's name still rings bells in business and literature, Ebenezer Scrooge. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we bring news of a Casey Holiday tradition as entrenched as the lights of the plaza, the time-honored story that considers past, present, and future, Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol, now open at the Casey Rep. Here in the studio on this Christmas Eve to discuss the show is director Kyle Hadley. That plus Chuck Haddock of KCUR's Fish Fry is cooking up some holiday tunes to serve up on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. Good morning, Kansas City. In a year of percentages, the 1%, percentage differential in election polling, percentage differential in stock market gains, percentage of Fed interest rates, the interest rate on debt ceilings, it's always a good thing to take a break from the counting house and sit down for a Christmas dinner. God bless us, everyone. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. It's that time of year again, the Kansas City Repertory Theater's latest interpretation of a time-honored story that considers past, present, and future, as we do every year, ourselves. Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol. Here in the studio to discuss the show over at the Spencer Theater on the UMKC campus is the director of this production, Kyle Hadley. Mr. Hadley, welcome back to Central Standard.
Thank you for having me.
Now, first, let's talk about the story itself, A Christmas Carol. What does it mean for you personally now that this is your third time around? Is it a charm? Is the third time a charm?
The third time is definitely the charm this year, I have to say. Well, you know, it's last year it felt like sort of phase two of two, you know, of the 30-year anniversary. But it really sort of this year felt a little bit more like, you know, the third phase of the third part of the third phase in the sense that everything that I've learned about the story and about our production at the Rep and it's 32 years now. Has sort of had a culmination in this year's production, both artistically and traditionally. It just feels as though it's become something that's not. I guess what I mean is it's not only has my recognition of how much it means to the city, but also it started to mean something to me as well. Not just something I do as part of my job, but now it's something I look forward to and an opportunity to tell that story in a new and different way and shape it according to the year in which we just lived.
So it's a ritual to you now.
It is. It's definitely become a ritual, and I've fallen into all the traditions that the cast has fallen into as well.
What are some of those traditions for our listeners who may not know what the break a leg sort of ritual
right
before the play is?
Right. Absolutely. Well, I mean, there's this kind of family quality about being involved in Christmas Carol, whether it's your first year or your 30th year being involved, and typically as a director. I'm a little bit outside of the cast and crew because I'm having to be objective and watching it. But I've learned just from my engagement with the actors that there are these little things that happen in the wings or these little things that happen in between shows and stuff like that, like potluck dinners. And they even have their own Secret Santa between the cast and crew that Jim Gall, who plays the Ghost of Christmas Present, manages. Like, he essentially gives everyone a form to fill out, and then he manages the whole thing. And and we're talking over 100 people participating in this. And this is my first year to participate in it because the deadline for filling out the Secret Santa is always unknown to me because I never hear about it because I'm not an actor. And I found out about it, so I weaseled my way into it.
So, Kyle, since it's a Secret Santa and you're not going to know who gave you the gift anyway, did
right.
you like your gift?
We get a gift every week, and we on Christmas Eve at a potluck where we invite the entire cast and crew invites their whole family. That's when we sort of unveil who our Secret Santa was.
Well, you're
so
going to
know
out
yet.
You're going to find out today. Then.
I will find out today. So I'm really nervous, but I'm excited too. I have loved all the gifts I've received so far. I'm looking forward to the gift that I am the Secret Santa for. I'm looking forward to giving that to her. I'll give that away. It's a female.
Right.
It's a crew member.
Right. And speaking of which, today you have a doubleheader for Christmas Eve. You have a matinee and a nighttime thing. You're spending your Christmas doing a Christmas carol. It's a two-a-day, like a football practice or something.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
How does that work? How do you get through that? How do you plan for a day like today?
You know, it's easy. It's not work. It's that one day where the thing we made is most celebrated because the time meets the circumstance. And all of us wake up and we're all eager to get to the theater that day because we know the audience is going to be leaning in a little bit more and we're going to be leaning towards them a little bit more. We're all going to be firing on all cylinders today. Because it's Christmas Eve, because that magic is in the air, and the power that this story that we get to tell consumes us in a way, so we get very excited about it. I always go for the last 3 years or last 2 years. I've always shown up on Christmas Eve to watch both performances and also to do the curtain speech and say hello to the audience before we start and hang out with the cast. It's just a nice thing to do because we work so hard to create it. We all love telling the story, and the day it matters most to tell it, we're all going to be. I mean, I think every performance is, we always do our best at every performance, but you can't help or anticipate the magic you feel regardless on Christmas Eve when you get to be one of the people that tells the story of Christmas Carol.
Will today's performance have any bells and whistles that other performances throughout the run of A Christmas Carol won't have because it's Christmas Eve?
No, we don't add or subtract anything just because of the day. I do think, though, it's that sort of everyone's hair on the back of their neck stands up a little bit more at the scary moments, and we rejoice a little bit harder on the joyful moments, and you know, I think it sort of falls into stark relief. That story sort of means something a little bit more on the day, you know, or the day of anticipating the day. So it's So I would say no bells and whistles planned, but I would expect them from the actors. Little surprises here and there.
You're doing the go round with media outlets and talking to magazine editors, writers, broadcasters, doing web blog appearances and things like that. And of course, the compulsory thing is to say, we're mixing it up this year. We're really spicing it up this year. You know, this is your third year, third go around. You are doing something different this year. What is it?
I would say if there's one thing that we're bringing differently to the story, it's actually that we're becoming better storytellers. So all of the gadgets, all the special effects, all of the big secrets that have been revealed over the last 2 years as far as the productions, 30th anniversaries, remount, revisitation, re-examination, etc., it's all been fully enhanced by this point. And now it was nice because I actually got to focus on the story as much as possible so that we understood every possible second of what Scrooge's journey. And I think the actors in the same way felt a little more free to do so because the last 2 years, while introducing all of these huge, huge technical elements, they tend to, in a way, sort of distract us a little bit. And it's my job to try to whittle away that distraction and get everything focused. But I feel like this is the clearest we've ever been in telling the story. And it's more emotional than I've ever seen it. It's funnier than I've ever seen it. It's scarier than I've ever seen it. And faster, too. And I mean that in a lean way. It's efficient storytelling. So it's 2 hours with an intermission. And that's, you can't beat that.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. We're talking about a story that inspires the dickens out of everyone this time of year, A Christmas Carol at the KC Rep, and they have a production, an annual production, of the Charles Dickens classic in full swing right now. We've been discussing it with director Kyle Hatley, who, despite being at the Rep since 2008, is back at the creative drawing board in this year, the 32nd year of the Christmas Carol production. Now, the cast has always interacted with the crowd. Will that be different today,
this year? That's a good question. Yeah, absolutely. With this run, there is a little bit more interaction with the audience, but there's also a lot more participation from the actors off the stage. In other words, there's a vocabulary, I think, in telling the story where the story, kind of like a pop-up book or a pop-out book, where the scenery sort of feels like it's coming at you and the actors sort of break that wall and come at you as well. And they're always kind of looming. They're always kind of near you. And I think in a way, I've just learned how to ease that into existence. Every year I've tackled this. This year, it was a lot of fun because what I've learned over the last 2 years is you can really scare people if actors sneak up on them in the audience. And I don't mean in a boo, in a sneaking up and just going boo quality. I mean, it's more along the lines of there's a moment where Scrooge is alone in his house and it's very dark. And it's what Hitchcock says, what you don't see scares us more than what we do see.
Right.
And I believe in that, and I do everything I can in my power to examine that in the story. But there are moments where the candlelight is the only light on stage, and we're all kind of zooming in with our eyes and anticipating something to happen on stage, when lo and behold, you feel something over your shoulder, and it's either an actor who's holding a bell, or it's a ghost for the Marley scene, depending on where you're sitting. And you know, we have those actors out. There's that moment when right before Marley's entrance, where all the bells start going crazy. They just start ringing by themselves, rather than just having the one bell on stage sort of ghostly do that. We have all these actors that are strategically placed to do that in the dark, right next to an audience member, so that there's their fear is personal.
Not to compare this to Jacob Marley and Ebenezer Scrooge, it is family fun. It is a great Christmas tradition. But what you're talking about here from a directorial perspective and a storytelling perspective, is that the difference between horror versus terror? Where with horror, you're seeing, oh my God, that's a ghastly thing.
Yeah.
Terror, you're like, oh my God, what's out there?
Yeah, 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 that's absolutely right. I mean, like, it's also a known British holiday tradition to tell ghost stories around this time of year, which seems foreign to us, I think. But there's something right about that. There's something right about Charles Dickens himself called it a ghost story. And so part of my responsibility as a director is to make sure that we're bringing the story as true to life as possible, as being as authentic as possible. And yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not a horror story, but it is a ghost story, and it's a bit of a roller coaster ride, I would say, more of a thriller, in that it wants to sort of scare you, but it wants to make you laugh right after that. And then it wants to make you sort of meditate emotionally on something that might be personal to you, like love or family. And it wants to, you know, guide you. Dickens is just so wonderful in how he plays with your emotions in that way. He'll scare you. He'll make you laugh. He'll make you cry. And then he'll make you feel important.
Now, you talked about feeling Scrooge's journey a few moments ago, minute by minute, and that you have the opportunity in your third go round to really get into the meat and the granular aspects of the story. How are you doing that?
I have to say that I could not achieve telling the story in as detailed a way as I think I have without the help of Gary Neil Johnson, who plays Scrooge. He is, he and the stage manager are sort of like the quarterbacks of the production. I've learned most of most everything I know about Christmas Carol from him and the other actors. So I have no problem turning to actors and asking their opinion. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the best idea in the room sticks. That's what wins. It doesn't matter who it came from. And often it'll come from actors, because actors have vivid imaginations, but also specifically Gary has a very strong narrative sense. He understands arc. He understands why one scene needs to be a certain way in order for the next scene to work. So I would say that the two of us together, often in conversation, discuss minute by minute, moment by moment, where is Scrooge? What is he doing? What is he thinking, and why?
And when you speak of Gary Neil Johnson, he definitely knows acting, and he definitely knows Scrooge. Is it peculiar? Because this is a very rare endeavor in acting. If you have a TV show, okay, you're the same character for X amount of weeks or months or years. If you're in a movie and you're in sequels, you're the same character for X amount of months, possibly years. But on stage, every year, year after year, how do you navigate a relationship like that where a guy not only knows Scrooge, but is Scrooge, and was Scrooge last year, just like you were Kyle Hadley last year?
That's right. That's a great question. Well, you know, I think that's what Gary relies on in me or any director. He's smart. He's very much aware that that just because it was one way last year doesn't mean it has to exactly be the exact same it was the year before or this year, if that makes sense. In other words, I always say to the cast at the first rehearsal, we're essentially picking up from where we left off last year. We're all students of the play. And Gary is very much open to that and smart about it. He often will come up and say, "Was that too much? Was that too little? Give me feedback." Because I think I can't imagine. I don't know. I can only speculate.
Right, it's very rare.
What it must be like to play the same role for that long, that many years in a row.
And in a substantial run every single year as well.
Every year, yeah. I think this is his 12th year as Ebenezer Scrooge, but he's been involved in that production for 31 years. All but one year, he's played something in it. He's played Dickens, he's played Marley, I think the first thing he was the first gentleman in Act Two in the Fred scene. But yeah, he's very good about communicating to me and asking me to pay attention to this or pay attention to that.
So 31 years and then 12 years straight. Oh,
Scrooge, that's right, yeah.
You think he's read the book?
I know he has. I think he's got it memorized.
Speaking of the book, you've definitely taken some liberties with Dickens from a script perspective over the years. This is your third year, but still stay true to the third-person narrative interlocutor. What tweaks were made to the actual script, if any, this year?
Yeah, to this year, I think it's just efficiency of storytelling. I wanted it to stay as lean as possible and as efficient as possible. Barbara Fields, her adaptation is beautiful. It's wonderful. But it's over the years, our production has been not without communication with her, but a little bit of a living script. In other words, if we wanted to pad a little bit more narration here, take away a little narration there, she has greenlighted that and been very, very kind about it. And I think that's something that Charles Fugate, who plays Charles Dickens, our narrator, he and I always geek out over that throughout the whole rehearsal process. And he knows, he's a very much a student of that book. He is a huge fan of it, as am I, but if I'm ever at a loss for a passage for the book or what section it's in or what page it's on, Charles probably hasn't memorized. But we talk about it a lot, and we actually play around with that. And in previews, we'll test it out.
Putting you on the spot, do you read it every year?
I don't read it every year. I read it. I wish I should have, but this year's been really busy. But I would say that the first time I directed it in 2010, I read it twice that year. I read it once in March.
Right, that was your first run.
Yeah, so I read it once in March.
First year of Central Standard as well. You came
on.
It
was, yeah. That was my first time. That's right. That's when we first met.
So you were gearing up.
Yes, I was. I became a big nerd about it.
Right.
And then I read it again while we were rehearsing, so that I could test out some of the changes we were making as far as dialogue and other moments from the book, and also design too. Because there's no better place to turn when you're trying to design Christmas Carol. Then go to the book, because the descriptions, Dickens is so wonderful with his descriptions. And then last year, of course, I read it again, but I read it during the preview process as opposed to before. And this year...
You didn't read it because it was crazy this year. Plus, two things to sort of build a template on.
Correct. Yeah, this is probably my busiest year at the rep so far. So it's been a time management thing. I can't say I've just neglected it. It's just that I haven't gotten around to it. But it feels like I've read it again. I mean, it's always right next to my script in rehearsal, but I just haven't read it, from beginning to end this year.
Is there anything you did differently to prepare since you didn't have time? You didn't have the time range to read the book or prepare or anything, not getting on your case about not reading the book, but is there anything you did differently?
Yes, absolutely. Because there are 61 people in this production, and those are just the people you see on stage, and in all fairness, that really breaks down when you consider that our youth cast, which are the kids in the show, anyone 17 and under, they break down into an A cast and a B cast, and they alternate nights, and that's to basically ease up their the holiday tension and their school schedules and whatnot. But 61 people walk on that stage, and it takes a lot of organization and pre-planning. So I worked essentially this year. I was able to look ahead and sort of put on paper who was going to play what, from the very beginnings, which is something that I would normally do in rehearsal and just sort of decide who was going to play what, even though I had a whole cast, an ensemble of people to choose from, because it's very much an ensemble story. It's almost as though it were a one-man show with a rich ensemble of talent guiding him through his own story. And it is kind of a whirlwind story in that way. And so you can't really plan too much, because you might find that you might stumble on a better idea in the rehearsal room, and you don't want to live with what's sort of got concrete poured on it otherwise. So, but I was able to plan ahead and design ahead so that by first day of rehearsal, we could stage the whole thing in 3 or 4 days and then really get down to scene work and get down to detail work while I'm also working with the designers on some changes here and there. So it's really about time management. And this was this year, being the third year, we had a reduced rehearsal time. We had 9 days in the rehearsal room actually to get everything staged and figured out before we were already dealing with tech rehearsals and lights and sound and stuff like that. So
give me a sense of how hectic it was from the beginning of the run through now as we sit here on Christmas Eve. Why was it so busy this year?
This year, I think it's been one of those years. I would say it's been mostly busy because our box office for this show has gone up just through the roof. I mean, we've sold more tickets for this show this year than we have in any year with Christmas Carol. So we're very proud about that, but it keeps us on our toes and it keeps us happy, of course. So we're busy, but we're happy about it. But I would say that from the first rehearsal to now, I think a lot of the actors who are still in the show and were with me from 2010 on had a similar feeling that I did, that this was our year to manicure everything, to get everything just right, and to really sort of solidify the work we'd done of the previous 2 years. So it just felt as though we were all, anticipating or anxious to get everything done better, faster, and make it the biggest and best version we've ever had. So we go the extra mile because of that, if that makes sense.
So sort of a box office record for the production.
Mm-hmm.
This year.
Yeah, absolutely it was. Yeah. And additionally, we had some unexpected surprises this year. Jim Gall, who is our Ghost of Christmas Present, wasn't able to come in town until our second day of tech. Likewise, Mark Robbins couldn't be in rehearsals until we were in previews because he was doing Irma Vep at the rep as well.
Right.
So
and
there
he
was
came
a
on the show and talked about that too. So
yeah.
He had to get out of the woman's dress and
come over and play Marley.
Yeah.
So we had and there were a few other circumstances similar to that as well. So we were all on our toes in the rehearsal room because when you don't have the full cast, it's very difficult to rehearse. Especially a show this big and a show this challenging, because it's a spectacular story in that it's got everything in it. It's inherently theatrical. It's a ghost story. It has time travel. You know what I mean? Like the technical challenges and the storytelling challenges require every actor involved to be there in order to understand clarity in storytelling. So that was really interesting. But because it was such a great ensemble, people had no problem stepping up. And when Mark wasn't able to be there, Matt Rapport stepped in and actually went on as Marley for a few previews, and he was just terrific. Likewise, Matt Rapport stepped in as Jim Gall's track as well throughout the rehearsal period. So that's one of the reasons I love theater, that no matter what happens, the ensemble, the team always works together to sort of, you know, help make it work, you know, despite any difficulties along the way or obstacles along the way.
Kyle Hadley, as we close out 2012, we couldn't be as a society in more uncertain times. And you say, as you said at the beginning of this broadcast, that you come in with a tone of society, with a sense of the waves of change in society, with a sense of the resonant themes in A Christmas Carol and how they make sense and are prevalent today. And you kind of come into the production with that. So given the state of the economy, there seems to be immediate timelessness and immediate timeliness mm-hmm. every year.
Mm-hmm.
But what's different about this year from that round perspective as an artist interpreting a timeless classic?
Right.
Big question.
Yeah, it is. It's a big question. You know, I think about it every year. I think the responsibility of any artist is to, before they begin their work, is to ask, why is this necessary for the time in which we live? Is it necessary for the time in which we live? And it is. This story, I think, is something we need to hear every year. And, you know, in years past, the last 2 years, I think there's something every year that sort of leaps off the page at me. And I think this year, in the previous years, it was the word enough is echoed throughout the script a number of times. Jim Gall's character, Christmas Past or Present, says it. He says, it's a wonderful word, enough, means something different to each man. And that's just a very heavy thing to consider when thinking about America today, or in the previous, since the recession. But
elaborate on that. Enough.
Well, I think,
how much is enough? How much is enough abuse? How much is enough? Enough. How much is
absolutely
enough?
Absolutely. I think, I mean, in the context of A Christmas Carol, enough essentially means food on the table in the moment when it's said. You know, the Cratchits are all gathering around their table and they're marveling at the feast that they have once a year like this. And I tell the Cratchits every year, like, you have to realize this isn't just, you're not just excited because this is your Christmas dinner and how families are really excited about Christmas dinners, but it's also because this is the most food you've ever seen on the table, and that's only true once a year because you guys that's the only time you can afford it because you save up for it. And it really does something. It adds something to that scene. But I think in consideration of that, it does mean something different to all of us. What are enough Christmas presents? What are enough presents at all? What is enough love? What is enough this? What is enough that? You're right. And I would say it goes back to what has actually leapt off the page for me this year. So in the previous years, I don't know if I would have been able to answer that articulately, but this year it feels as though the thing that stood out to me was the Marley scene in where he comes to visit Scrooge at the beginning of the play. And Scrooge says to him, "You were always such a good man of business." And Marley reacts violently to that. Business, the common welfare, charity, forbearance, benevolence. These were all my business.
Mankind
was my business.
Right.
And it's true.
Should have been.
Yes, and right. In fact, right. The message really, actually, if you look at if you strip away everything else, all the magic and everything else, the message that is left in the book and in the play is Marley's line that we were meant to walk abroad among our fellow men in life. And if we don't, we're condemned to essentially let it all go to waste and watch as we can't participate. And so it tells me something that, and here I am about to share what I believe is the meaning of life, that we are meant to participate in life, that we are not meant to disengage from it, but we are meant to connect to it and engage with it. And the ripple effect that we will cause from that can have an effectively positive chain reaction in some way. Now, I'm a theater artist, so that's the best way I know possible.
It's very visceral and very philosophical.
Correct.
For you. Right.
Yes.
Right.
But at the same time, like these are those struggles where we do what we. I'm a very thankful human being because I get to do what I love for a living every day of my life. However, there are times when I wish I could be a politician. When I wish I could just do away with what I love, so that I can help others in a more effective way, or at least that's what I think sometimes, and feel a little bit guilty about that.
You wish you could be a politician?
I mean, I wish I had the capacity to do so. I wish I had a bigger capacity for change. But as a theater artist, I'm just a...
Or maybe duplicity, or maybe...
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Well, or just, you know, I think it takes a certain kind of, you know...
Sacrifice.
We're all, like, it's either in your DNA or how you're shaped as you grow up. And I don't think I could... I think I would probably just beat my head against a wall if I were ever really in politics, because I can't imagine the obstacles that must be overcome for any kind of change to occur. We already know how difficult that is. But as a theater artist, I still have a megaphone, so I can be as loud as I want with whatever show I direct. and Christmas Carol is probably my favorite one to do because it's a universal message. It's a universal story. We all know it. But I like surprising people when they come to it. I like them walking away thinking, I heard the story for the first time, which is what we're hearing time and time again this year, more so than we ever have in years past. That was one of the reasons I wanted to attack this differently this year, or rather more passionately this year, to really make sure the story was crystal clear. so that the audience can walk away knowing, or at least have the potential of feeling as passionately about it as I do, that if Scrooge doesn't change, I mean, the stakes are literally that high. If Scrooge doesn't change, Tiny Tim will die. If he does not participate in life, if he's not engaged with his fellow man, then with benevolence and charity and forbearance, then the ripple effect will never occur, and that kid's life will never change. And I think actually, you know, in light of recent circumstances, when you think about tragedies, especially with our future kids,
right.
We owe them everything. We owe them more than parents have owed kids in the past. As we, you know, I feel like, I don't know, I'm not saying the world is going to hell or anything like that.
But it's fair to say that the stakes are higher.
The stakes are higher. I think the world has become smaller because we're reaching more people through the internet, through, we have video cameras on our phones. We can talk, we have FaceTime and stuff like that. So we've managed to whittle down distance from each other, and yet we remain distant from each other. And I'm guilty of this too. I'm guilty of everything I'm saying, but I wanted this year's Christmas Carol to be more than a reminder. I wanted it to be something that, that people think about when they close their eyes at night.
And we got past the end of the Mayan calendar.
Yeah, yes, we did. Yes, we did. We are still here. Thank God the Mayans math was off.
Right. It's that time of year again. The Kansas City Repertory Theater's latest interpretation of a time-honored story in its 32nd year that considers past, present, and future, as we do every year as individuals and groups and families. Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol. Our guest is director Kyle Hatley, the director of that production at the KC Rep at the Spencer Theater through December 26th.
That's right.
Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you for having me.